Before we begin, I just want to say a big thanks to Jen, Nancy, and Teresa from Teach for participating in this workshop, and also to Yasmin, who made it happen. It's 2% glitchy. I recorded it in a WeWork on Zoom with a live audience. When I do that, as in live audience plus thinking about podcast, I'm often in two minds. I don't pay attention to chat because I'm typing up notes, I'm interviewing, and then sometimes I find myself nervously filling the space with a lot of filler language and verbal tics. Right? Oh my gosh, I didn't know I said that often. Also, I know that Scandinavia is not a country. I don't know why that came out. I was literally nervous before we recorded this. It's been maybe a month or two since I've done interviews or any interaction that's not just me talking into a mic. Anyway, it's fun. I hope you enjoy it. Do check out the Sweathead Do Together conference details at thedotogether.com in October. 10 hours of strategy conference plus 3 masterclasses. And the next Sweathead Strategy Accelerator starts on October 25. 4 weeks online, live, asynchronous, whatever, one of those, strategy learning that'll make you come alive. Enjoy the episode. What's up and welcome to Sweathead with Mark Pollard. I have a crew from Teach, all caps, T-E-A-C-H, but all caps. And that means that if you go to their website, which is teach.org, you have to write the URL in all caps. It's a new thing. I'm totally joking. I'm just seeing if people are tracking along with sarcasm. That's not how capitalization on the internet works. We have a live audience today for those of you who are going to end up listening to this. And we're going to work on a brief, which is about getting teachers or potential teachers to teach. There's a more focused subject that we'll get into in a session. We're going to use the 4 points today, which is a framework that I like to use. And then we're also going to use an article from Washington Post, which has a few spicy quotes in there. So on the one hand, we'll show you a way of getting to ideas under pressure or strategy under pressure using a framework, and another, which is just going to riff off a sentence or two that someone has said. I have Jen, Teresa, and Nancy. Nancy is Director of Growth Marketing at Teach. Teresa, I'll give you both pronunciations the whole time, is Director of Programs. And we have Jen C, who is Senior Director of Content. Let's start off with Jen telling us very, very quickly, what is Teach? All caps, Teach.
Teach is a national nonprofit, and our mission is to increase the quantity, quality, and diversity of the teaching workforce in the US. And we kind of tackle that in a couple of different ways. One of them is sort of inspirational, like a national inspiration campaign. But then the other is like a much more tactical, localized strategy in which we're partnering with state departments of education in several states in order to help people in those states figure out the path to becoming a teacher, because there are quite a number of ways to become, a lot of bureaucratic language to sort of sort through and figure out. And so we offer information, we offer one-on-one coaching, and we offer scholarships and sort of various other tools to help people figure out what kind of teaching program they might want to enter and connect them so that they can sort of get on the path and get going.
I love it. I love it. I'm going to ask you 3 questions, 3 quick answers.
Okay.
Why don't teachers get the same respect in this country compared to, say, Scandinavia, which is always the country that this conversation touches on? But there are countries where teachers are very, very respected. In the USA, doesn't seem to be the case. Why is that?
I can tell you that care work generally is seen as, you know, not as lucrative, I suppose, not as many other professions. I definitely will open that up to anybody else who wants to take a swipe at it.
One of the reasons that it's more challenging in the United States for teaching to garner the respect it deserves is that requirements for becoming an educator vary so vastly across the country. It isn't just a state-by-state basis. In some areas, it's super localized, and it is hard to attract a national respect for an entity when you do not have a national standard of entry, as they might in Finland, for example.
Yeah, definitely.
Singapore, whatever.
Finland seems to be number one. For anyone interested in this, there's a book called The Smartest Kids in the World. It compares the education systems of Finland, where a lot of the US teachers go to kind of study that environment, South Korea, et cetera. Super interesting. Okay, Jen, where's most of your funding come from?
We partner with our state departments of education. And I would say, and anybody correct me again if I don't have this quite right, but most of our funding is therefore coming from our state partnerships.
And then the final point I wanted to talk about is the national campaign. Like, what kind of budget is behind it? How much reach does it have? What's its theme, its message?
Well, you're seeing the message right there on the screen, which is that the future depends on teachers. In terms of the budget, that's something I don't know. If anybody else here has that information, then feel free to jump in. And Nancy, you may be more positioned than I am to talk about the reach of this.
So our national campaign is actually a PSA that runs over TV and radio. So we actually don't have a paid marketing budget behind it. We work with an agency that helps us distribute the PSA on a national basis.
Just curious, because we're going to be talking about a campaign that's largely bottom of the funnel. I know a lot of people don't like funnels, don't believe they exist, but essentially bottom of the funnel. Just curious what air coverage would exist for the campaign that we're going to discuss. Speaking of which, let's talk about the three campaigns that have recently been in market. Nancy.
Given that we have fairly limited budgets and that we partner with different states throughout the country, we have found the most success with paid social campaigns because we can drive leads at a fairly decent price and we can geo-target our ads. And these are three of the recent campaigns that we've run. One of our priorities is reaching and increasing the number of teachers of color. So that's why you see the bilingual campaign on the left and the Future Black Teachers campaign on the right. We also support potential teachers who are interested in acquiring their teaching certificate or licensure using alternative routes. And what that generally means is that if you have a bachelor's degree and but you don't have a teaching certificate or licensure, you could potentially, going through one of these programs, start teaching and earning a salary at the same time. And that's these alternative certification campaign ads that you see here in the middle.
All right. And for those listening along at home, we're looking at three campaigns through Facebook and Instagram. One is a bilingual campaign. Main message is you're in high demand. We need bilingual maestros. The second is an alternative certification campaign, which launched in spring 2022. And its main message that I can see there is you can start teaching right away. Points people to a free teacher certification guide. Certification that came out funny. It's a long, long word. I'm simple. The far side, number three, is Future Black Teachers campaign, where some of the main messaging is around Black educators are in high demand. Students need teachers like you. Okay, so they're the three main things. What were the formats? Are we talking video? Is it carousels, animated GIFs?
These have mostly been static ads. We are moving more towards GIFs and motion graphic ads, and we're trying to incorporate more video, but these particular campaigns have been static ads.
How do you measure success?
Our bilingual campaign has been very successful. It's been running for over a year and it has continually been one of our top performers. The alternative certification campaign launched in the spring and it has slowly been gaining momentum. It's a message that really resonates with people. The thought of not having to put your life on pause to go get and not be earning a salary to go get your teaching certificate. I think that that's very appealing. We also launched the Future Black Teachers campaign in the spring, and we've struggled a little bit more with that one. We don't know why. We're still trying to figure out why the Future Black Teachers campaign has been a little bit tougher for us, whereas the bilingual campaign, which is targeting anyone in the Latinx community, has had a little bit more success. So we're still trying to identify the differences between those and why bilingual has performed better.
Two or three of the main metrics that you look at for these campaigns?
So we're looking at volume of leads. We're looking at cost per lead. Those are our two main metrics that we're looking
at. And by lead, how do you know when somebody is a lead? What's the mechanic?
If you click through one of these ads, you will land on one of our landing pages. There's a form fill on that landing page. If you fill out that form fill, you become a lead within our CRM.
You know, if you were selling luxury cars, you would know like the lifetime value, generally speaking, of that lead. Is there an equivalent to that, like the lifetime value of a teacher? And surely it's $1 billion+ per teacher, but do you have a crude number like that?
Not of a teacher, but the next phase of assessing the performance of our campaigns is, does this lead turn into teacher preparation program applicant? That is our ultimate goal. And we work really closely with the teacher prep programs in each of our regions in order to be able to cross-reference their applicant lists with our lead list so that we can see how effective our marketing was.
Now we're going to look at the brief. Teresa, take us through it. And I know that Nancy is going to chip in. What's the brief we're looking at today?
We are endeavoring to launch a campaign in at least one of our regions, but probably others as well, to reach potential STEM teachers. STEM is an acronym that stands for science, technology, engineering, and math. And so the problem that we're facing is that, as many have likely heard, the United States is experiencing a shortage of teachers. And this has actually been going on before the pandemic. It's been exacerbated by the pandemic. But certain subjects historically and presently have been hit a bit harder. So teachers who would instruct students in STEM subjects, again, science, technology, engineering, and math, and or math, I should say. So math teachers or science teachers or engineering teachers, et cetera. This is an area where there's consistently a greater shortage of teachers in many states across the country. And so we are interested in, for this campaign in particular, reaching anyone who has already earned a bachelor's degree and who is interested or open to teaching a STEM subject.
And as far as the media platforms, as I mentioned earlier, we do have limited budgets and our business goal is to drive as many low-cost leads as possible. So we spend the majority of our budgets on paid social, Facebook and Instagram mainly, and then Google search as well. We have tested a couple other channels, but paid search and Google search have been the highest performing for us historically.
What kind of budget would go into one of these campaigns?
So we produce the assets in-house. Yasmin does a lot of our design work in-house, and then a lot of people on Jen's team do some of the other ads. Each region has its own paid marketing budget. It's fairly limited. It can be anywhere from $3,000 a month up to maybe $10,000 a month. So that's pretty small.
I think final kind of question, there might be two questions in this before we actually get into doing some strategy together, is are you doing anything on TikTok and or with, forgive the word, influencers, people who are present on these platforms?
Yeah.
That's not just about paid advertising.
So that's actually been something that we talk about a lot. And one of the things that is really challenging for us is producing content for a platform like TikTok. We just do not have the internal capacity to do that as of now, but it's something that we probably discuss at least, you know, a couple times a month. And it's something that we're well aware of we should be doing. And then as far as influencers goes, I think, Jen, you just hired someone on your team that can hopefully help us be a conduit to people that could potentially be influenced for us. I don't know if you have anything to add on that.
Sure. Yeah. You know, kind of managing a program that solicits really great content and sort of has that reciprocal relationship with people who, you know, have a large enough following to be considered an influencer definitely requires a level of capacity that we just haven't been able to put to it in the past. And so we did recently hire somebody who's on this call today. Hi, Ebony, to help us just develop a program that is going to be a lot more targeted at making really solid relationships with people in our communities, you know, and to be able to like have that reciprocal relationship and hopefully get a lot more content that we could use on platforms like TikTok, while also, you know, ensuring that our partners are distributing our content as well.
I would only add that in the past, to a limited extent, we have leveraged influential teachers in the particular states and regions where we work for some campaigns. So State Teachers of the Year, for example, in some of our states, certainly not to the degree which we probably would like due to capacity constraints and things of that nature. But we have done a bit of that to a limited extent.
Those are like the exceptions that really prove the rule, because when we're able to engage in that kind of work, we see benefit from it. And so we want to be able to engage in it more.
For those listening, that was Jen. Before that, Tracy, before that, Jen. Just want to have everybody track along. It's really hard. Like when you're set up to do marketing and a new platform comes in and it blows up, you can have people internally be so, why aren't we doing this? Why aren't we doing this? But anybody who's working in a marketing group who's frustrated by like the organization, which is not what I got, I didn't get those vibes then, but who's frustrated by the organization, listen to like Colin and Samir, who have YouTube presence and podcasts about the creator economy and all of that sort of stuff. I'm like, personally, I should be on TikTok. I should be on YouTube. And I'm like, that's a full-time job, sometimes for many, many people. Mr. Beast, three studios, millions of dollars going into videos. Like it's crazy, at least tens and tens of thousands. It's intense. I do believe that some of the platforms you've mentioned, and I'm not shilling for any of them, are trying to work out how to help organizations like yourself more easily collaborate with creators. So they'll be messaging out in the world about all of that very, very soon. Thank you for the background. Right now, for those of you who have not seen this, I'm going to use the 4 points, this little diagram, little approach that I like to use. Use what works. There are many frameworks out in the world. Choose your situation and just go for it. Problem, insight, advantage, and strategy. I'll define these words and then we're going to work. With the business issue and the audience in mind, we try to identify the problem and we try to go deep into the problem so we're not just solving a shallow symptom that repeats. The problem, the way I define it, is the human problem behind the business problem. What does that mean? The obstacle or the barrier, the thing that's in the way from getting people to do something. You know, it's an advertising problem that we can solve and a problem of perception and or behavior. Insight, an unspoken human truth that sheds new light on the problem. Advantage, I know there's a lot of jargon here, but I'll try to explain it and then try to make it really practical when we go through the exercises. Advantage, this is really about the brand. When we're doing things like this, there's an organization, but then there's also like a social issue and it can be a little bit complicated, right? Like, what are we selling? Are we selling teach or teaching? In this case, we're selling teaching through teach, right? Simpler to sell yogurt. You know, it's about yogurt. But the advantage is what makes your thing, your brand, unique and motivating in people's minds. Strategy, a new way of seeing your thing based on all of that. So the strategy sentence tries to solve the problem by putting the insight and the advantage together, all right? If it's your first time with this and you're working with me right now, people from teach, it's all good. We'll get you through it. So the task, as I understand it, is we want to get people with a bachelor's degree, also known as graduates, and also who have an interest in teaching STEM to somehow connect with you to register. All right. Now, can you give me a little bit more detail about the audience and not in a boring way? Tell me about these people. Surely you know some of them. You've spoken to some of them. You've tried to convince some of them to register, or some have and they've been really successful, and maybe some didn't like it and flamed out of the teacher preparation program. Two or three things that you think are worth keeping in mind as we go through this exercise.
These are people who have careers and they have lives, and they're looking to make a change in their career that impacts their life and their community. For example, maybe they were a biology major and they've been working in a research lab for the last 10 years. Or maybe they went to business school and they're an accountant. Their motivation for a change can range. Perhaps they supported their children with their studies during the pandemic in a way they hadn't before, and that inspired them. Perhaps it's always been a dream, but they, life took them in another direction. Or perhaps they're just looking to have a job later in life where they're more impacting their community, and they are looking to find a way to do something really scary, completely change their life and their career. And it's also scary because it can be overwhelming and complicated to figure out the path to getting there. And all the while, they're still needing to keep the trains running in their life and in their professional job while they figure all of this out.
Just from that, we're going to run through the 4 points, but just from that, I'm thinking about the people I've known who've made this kind of switch. Forget age, but first half of life, second half of life. It's not uncommon. You would have the numbers. I don't. Maybe mid-30s, early 40s is like, you know, maybe I can make one more big change. And often if you get into it with people, they kind of did what the world told them to do, but they don't necessarily love the direction their life took, even if they had a good career and they were able to pay for things, right? But there's psychology there for some people that I need to get my life back on track. I need to connect to something that's worth being here. That kind of honesty and what's going on in people's minds there is very emotional. And I just want to make sure that we keep that alive as we go through this. Okay. What I was saying is, regardless of framework, you could probably get to a strategy based on what I was just summarizing there.
Yeah. I'm going to mention that of the people that we've actually spoken to, like we've written stories about, who have already gotten a degree and who had a career and they're coming back into teaching, they sort of universally are telling us that, you know, there was just a point at which they said, I want to do something more meaningful than what I'm currently doing. And, you know, they either did some tutoring or something that led them into teaching. So yeah, that meaning is pretty critical.
And for those thinking along, what you could do is you could, when you're thinking strategically, when you're thinking about the message you want to say or the stories you want to tell, you could talk about meaning, wanting to find more meaning, but it's more powerful, I believe, if your storytelling starts with something like, I spent 20 years not liking the direction my life was taking. If you take off the psychology and you just talk about meaning, which is still psychological, right? I don't mean to be esoteric. I'm just trying to be useful. But like if you take off kind of the pain sometimes that the thinking comes from, the thinking loses its power. All right. So for the marketers listening along, keep some of that raw truth alive on your slides. Don't delete it because you think it's inappropriate. It could be the heart of the thing that you end up communicating. Okay, so what we're going to do here is we're going to try to list about 5 to 7 problems. I'm going to type them up as we go. I want you to think about this audience. And I want you to think, or tell me, because what you're saying here is they've got teaching on their minds, right? That's what I'm hearing here. Why are they not taking the next step? I'll write it in the first person, I think. Let's get to at least 2 each. Get us to 6.
For so many people, that might be a downgrade in pay or just simply not enough pay to sustain them as they start, you know, raising families and so forth.
I'll do first person. I don't want to downgrade, so pay, et cetera. Very cool. Thank you, Jen.
It seems too overwhelming and complicated to make that switch into this completely new career.
Okay, so I'll write down the switch seems overwhelming. Teresa?
The process is confusing. I don't know what my next step is, even if I wanted to take it.
That's the thing is, as you're sort of sharpening, going through the problem statement and even the insight, maybe you go back and sharpen the audience. Because if it's true, if you've got data to support what I think you said earlier, where a lot of these people have had it on their mind, that's a very different person to talk to compared to someone who's never thought about it, right? I'm just going to say some of the obvious stuff. Jen, give me one more, please.
They've heard that teaching is hard, or, you know, that they're worried about whether or not they'll be able to handle students in a classroom setting.
Handling of students is the biggest thing that I hear about from existing teachers and at the college level. I don't know if I can handle students, .. Okay, very cool. Nancy?
They don't really know many people because their whole life has been spent in a certain industry. They don't know many people who are teachers. It just seems like the day-to-day of a teacher is just so out of the realm of everything that they know. It's this huge unknown that's scary.
If you spend your days trying to get into people's heads, but are interested in strategy classes, books, and events that get into your head, visit sweathead.com. You can pick up the Kickstarter-funded book, Strategy Is Your Words, by me. Find out about our monthly membership, online classes, and the company training that we do. Yes, this was an ad, a gentle, gentle ad. Back to the interview.
Teresa?
I don't have any experience, a prior experience that I feel like lends itself to success. Maybe I'm too old. Maybe I'm too far along in my journey to make a switch.
So I'm going to read out what I've written down and I'll point out a couple of things for the student-oriented people here. I don't want to downgrade. The switch seems overwhelming. I don't know what my next step is. I've heard it's hard. I don't know if I can handle the students. I don't know many people who are teachers. The day-to-day of a teacher is out of the realm of everything I know. I'm afraid because I don't have any experience. Maybe I'm too something, a hyphen, I needed that too, like air quotes, something, too old, too whatever it is, too late to make a switch. So when you're doing this exercise, first of all, you'll notice that I'm not using any big language. I don't have any opinions yet, but I'm not using any big language. And anytime someone who was interacting with me used the word and or threw in another phrase, that for me became a separate problem, right? Because I just want clear, short sentences. You know, sometimes when you're in a workshop and everyone's using really big marketing language or academic language, long sentences, sometimes it feels like you're being attacked. It's like, what are you even saying? And now I've got to try to understand it. So don't do that. Keep everything simple, one problem at a time. Now what we're going to do is we're going to dig into the problem. Okay. Now what we could do is organize these by priority. That could be informed by a survey that we could do now, or maybe something's been done earlier. There's also a way to organize this based on path to purchase. And I know a lot of people don't like path to purchase, but for example, someone who says, I don't know what my next step is, that's obviously quite far along a path to purchase versus someone who's like, oh, I don't even know what teaching is. What's a school? That's like not very advanced on the path to purchase. So as a group, I'm buying you a little bit of time. If we focused on one of these to dig into, the thing that you think is the thing we want to focus on, and if we can crack it, it might lead to the change you're looking for. Which is it?
I might nominate this switch seems overwhelming And the reason why I nominate that one is because of the things that we offer are really geared toward that. You know, we offer people coaching to help them figure out which path they might choose. We sort of help remove some of the barriers to actually getting there, but like we can't change some of the bigger issues like how much teachers get paid and, you know, and things like that.
Okay. Anybody else have a different opinion? This is where I start to understand power dynamics in groups, by the way.
I defer to Jen's point. I think that's a good one.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Just taking notes on power dynamics here. That makes sense. And we'll play with that in a second. As soon as you say, I like that one because we solve it, I get nervous, you know, because a lot of like the way that a lot of the people here do strategy or account planning is we're not yet thinking about brand and product. We're like, what's really going on with these people? And then, you know, so people like us, when we're in meetings, we're constantly thinking, what about that person I interviewed? How would they feel about this? Or what did they say to me? We're constantly channeling humans. We will play with this and we're going to do the 5 whys, which might end up being 3 whys, or it could be many, many more. For those listening along at home, I'm working in a Google document and I've just taken, 8 of the problem statements and I've moved them onto a second page. And we are currently going to work with the problem. The switch seems overwhelming. Now I'm going to ask why. Jen, why does the switch seem overwhelming? And just give me one sentence and one theme.
The switch seems overwhelming because there are many different pathways to becoming a teacher and you have to choose one.
Why? So the switch seems overwhelming. Why? There are many different pathways to become a teacher and you have to choose one. Now, the challenge with when we do like the 5 whys or the problem, any problem behind the problem exercise is if I just say why again, let's see what happens. Jen, you just said there are many different pathways to become a teacher and you have to choose one. If I just say why, you might say, well, because there are. Right?
Right.
And then the exercise ends. So what we want to do is we probably want to bring the word overwhelming through and ask a question that might feel a bit dumb. Like, why would that be overwhelming?
I personally feel overwhelmed when I have too many choices and I don't know which one's best for me. I want to choose the best.
I'm going to keep working with you on this, Jen. Sometimes if I bounce between people, we can get a little bit distracted, but Nancy and Teresa, definitely think through this and maybe I'll do it a second time with one of you. Okay. The switch seems overwhelming. Why? There are many different pathways to become a teacher and have to choose one. Why would that be overwhelming? I don't know which one is the best for me. Okay. Why would that be overwhelming?
I'm afraid that if I choose the wrong path, it will cost too much money, take too long. I won't get trained appropriately and will be terrible at teaching.
Slightly different question. Why would that be a problem?
I don't want to waste my time. I don't want to waste my money. And I don't want to be bad at teaching. I'm afraid of failure, essentially.
You're afraid of what?
Failure.
Okay. So at this point, I want to push a little bit more into the psychology of this, right? I've interviewed thousands of people. And when I'm interviewing someone and they're in the shallow end of the pool, and I'm not saying anybody here is in the shallow end of the pool, as soon as I get to drag them into the deep end of the pool with floaties on, knowing they can swim very safe with lifeguards and what do you call them? Lifesavers, those people nearby. Okay. No deep end pool dragging without safety around. That's what I'm pro safety when it comes to deep end of the pool dragging. Sometimes you need a little bit of a different tack. And when that happens, sometimes you start to feel a different energy in the interaction. Someone's voice might get like a little croaky or there could be a little crack, a little foreshadowing there. So we have the switch seems overwhelming. Why? There are many different pathways to become a teacher and you have to choose one. Why is that overwhelming? I don't know which one is the best for me. Why would that be overwhelming? I'm afraid that if I choose the wrong path, it could cost me money and time and I'll be terrible. Why is that a problem? I don't want to waste my time or money and I don't want to be a bad teacher. I'm scared of being a failure. Okay. So I just want us to pause here. If somebody's thinking about making this change, because look, they could waste their time or money on a weekend. They could go to the supermarket, buy something they don't like. They could buy something impulsively on Amazon on a Friday night at 10 p.m. after a few drinks, waste their time and money. What's different about being a teacher and worrying about wasting time and money?
I mean, I think with a vocation, like it's so bound up in our identities. And so if I'm making a big switch in my life and I also sort of fail at it in some way, then that, you know, that really just says something about me as a human. It reflects on like how I might want to speak about my vocation or my profession with the people that I know. There's sort of a lot tied up in any job you have, and certainly one when you're making a big change like this.
So Nancy and Teresa, I'd love to hear some words from you to do with this particular where we're at right now. Okay. So yeah. I'm thinking about making this switch. Maybe I don't like the past 10, 20 years of my life, I thought I did. I had to pay off or try to pay off college debt in the US. I want to teach. I want to be of service. But like, if I get this wrong, what?
I think you're also letting kids down. The reason that people make the switch is because they want to make a positive change, a positive impact in the world. And if you fail at it, you might feel like you're doing the opposite of that.
Which would be?
Letting kids down. They don't learn to read. They don't learn to do algebra. They don't learn to be good citizens of the world.
Okay.
Everything that you thought you'd be doing as a teacher, maybe you're afraid.
So I was just writing some other words down as well for later. I don't know if they're going to make sense. So Teresa, let's say you're having a really emotional conversation. You're at a teacher's conference. It's happy hour. It's 5 p.m. I'm not supporting the drinking of alcohol, but let's just say people are in a very emotionally honest place. And they're like, I want to do this, but like, what if I get it wrong? What are they not saying? What's going on with that person?
They don't want to mess up the future, children's futures.
Okay. I'm curious to stay in the teacher's mindset about the teacher as opposed to the altruistic thing, right? What I imagine, and it's funny, I think e-commerce platforms like Shopify are a bit like this, that for a lot of people, when they don't necessarily really like the twists and turns of their life, teaching, like setting up a store on Shopify, could be a way out or even a way back, right? I'm thinking through people I know who've made this change. And it could be a way back to a more meaningful life. But when we're talking like that, a more meaningful life's a little bit esoteric for us, right? Do you identify with what I'm talking about? Or have you heard stories? Like, what is teaching a vehicle for from a personal point of view? Yes, we want to help kids. We want to be of service, etc. But give me some raw psychology because they could do other stuff.
Are you asking why somebody would choose teaching over some other ways of, you know, sort of being of service?
Yeah. And they're probably obsessing about it. You know, like when you're making this kind of change, you're probably thinking about it quite a lot for quite a long time.
People hear on the news that there is a teacher shortage and they think, hey, I can address that. They may have children and like children, you know, potentially, you know, or sort of theoretically like kids. So there are individual faces that you actually are in a classroom. And where you're sort of making a contribution that's tangible and immediate, whereas some of the other types of service you can do are a little bit more upstream or downstream from the problem, right?
Yep. It seems like there's this tension. I know it's an obvious tension. I want to help, but what if I hurt? Right? Just to summarize the last part of that conversation. Now, we started off with the problem being the switch seems overwhelming, but we're deeper now, aren't we? I want to help, but what if I hurt? Can we play with this for the rest of our time together? Let's try it.
Yeah.
There's some what I call joining language, the joining language between the problem and the insight, the language that you can use, do whatever you want, but the language that you can use is this, but here's the thing about ... you know, so I want to help, but what if I hurt? We're going to riff on help and hurt, which is an obvious thing to riff on. I've probably done it before. It's not why we're here, but like we want the insight to open up the problem to help us understand it in a new way. And it's going to deal with helping and hurting. If you're in the chat, feel free to write your answers. And I'm sure if we see anything interesting, we'll steal it. Jen, Nancy, Teresa, we're all on the spot here. Is anything coming to mind? Like you're having this conversation with someone at the Possible New Teachers Conference, PNTC, we just made it up, Possible New Teachers Conference. And like, I want to help, but what if I do bad? I want to do good. What if I do bad? How might you talk back to that or shed new light on that tension for us?
Well, something somebody put in the chat, I think it was Frank, that, you know, people may have had a really great teacher in their life. So they've had this sort of like, everybody's had at least one really, really good teacher, I imagine, in their lifetimes. And so they have this model, this sort of aspirational model. We've all probably had many not so awesome teachers either. So they're really like sort of, we know and can identify both of those types. We hope that we're one, but what if we're the other?
Okay.
One thing that I recall from my time teaching that I hear from our teachers who support us in our work and help us out is every day is a new start. So you get a fresh start every day and you get to do better the next day. So okay, you're learning and growing too, and that's okay.
Okay. It'd be good to hear one or two. We'll aim for five. We have two things written down. Try to keep the word help or the word hurt alive.
There's something else that Annette put in the chat that I think is interesting. The fact that there are kids who have no STEM educator right now. And by becoming a STEM teacher, you can help them.
Can you paraphrase yourself? Oh, not paraphrase, like sub-edit yourself. So I've written, some kids have no STEM educator right now. Please use help and or hurt, dot, dot, dot.
You could help them by becoming their STEM teacher, even if you are not the perfect teacher. That's what Annette said. Thanks, Annette.
Okay. If you've got big statistics, there's probably another way to write this really directly, which is no STEM teacher will hurt them more than you could. Sorry if that's inappropriate. Like, I don't mean it in, you know, it's slightly problematic. Sometimes when we write these things, it's got to come out and you're like, oh, we got to change that. But it seems like the fact that a lot of them don't have STEM teachers means that they're out there hurting already. Yes, something like that, right?
Yeah, an imperfect human is better than no teacher whatsoever, right? So that, I think that's true.
So a lot of students don't, I'm going to hold that sentence because I want to use it in a second. A lot of students don't have a STEM teacher, so they're out there hurting already. Now the sentence, was that, I think that was Jen, right? What was the sentence you just said?
An imperfect human in the classroom is better than nobody in the classroom.
I want to use words like help and hurt a few times. I'm going to repeat them just so we stay close to the theme that we're talking about. And for those of you who are like, why do people always say, is there a tension in the inside or in the problem statement? Help and hurt, kind of opposite words, okay? Mm-hmm. Tension. I want to do X, but something else is happening. So problem, I want to help, but what if I hurt? I've written it as a question in the first person. Insight, well, a lot of students don't have a STEM teacher right now, so they're out there hurting already. We can change this. Advantage. And so here's where we go, because it's not the advantage of teach. It's the teach as in T-E-A-C-H, the organization. It's the advantage of teaching STEM. That's what we're selling here, right? It, really. I think that's true, right? An imperfect human in the classroom is more helpful than a classroom without a teacher. Okay. Now, an imperfect human, could we swap imperfect human, those two words, because we swap them for something else?
A caring person?
Yeah. So what if we use the word help or a word connected to it?
Maybe like the fact that you don't know everything won't hurt kids. If you inspire them to learn more, that helps them.
Okay. So they're kind of connected, those two sentences. We've got a teacher there to help is better than no teacher at all. We have the fact you don't know everything won't hurt kids if you inspire them to learn more. With a strategy statement, let's see if we can conclude this. Show that X is Y is often a structure I like to use. And I like to use a strategy statement with that kind of structure. And later, a key message or a single-minded proposition, which would be a shorter version of the strategy statement, because a strategy statement will hopefully clearly lay out the two topics coming together, and we can clearly understand the idea in the strategy. The idea in the strategy is not meant as a campaign idea. Lots of explanation there. So what we want to do, show that X is Y. Part of where we're going here is something about like learning together, you know, which is a direction. I don't know if that'd be politically palpable, but what I appreciate about what we've put together so far is that it's honest. Like it's honest and simple. So what do we want the campaign to say? What do we want it to focus on? I'm going to repeat where we're at to buy myself some time and to buy everybody else some time. Problem, I want to help, but what if I hurt? Insight, a lot of students don't have a STEM teacher, so they're out there hurting already. Sort of an insight. It feels a little factual, a little like reporting something that's true, but let's see, let's play with it. Advantage, the fact that you don't know everything won't hurt kids. What can you see as like a main message that would come out of this? What are we going to say to people?
Use your knowledge to inspire kids. Is that what we're sort of getting at here?
There's probably two. If we just sort of talk, if we don't fuss over the language, there's a direction which talks about like use the knowledge you already have and mix it with, oh, I don't want to say corny word. Oh my gosh, so many corny words are trying to land here. Passion, inspiration, meaning. Oh, what's it like a non-corny word?
Excitement for learning. That's pretty corny.
Impact.
So use the knowledge you already have and mix it with, you know, your passion, your excitement for learning, and you'll be a great teacher. There's a direction like that, but said better. And then there's another one, which is, and this is probably counterintuitive. It's the one that like my brain's going back to. I would want to work out how to say it in a way that wouldn't be politically like get you politically attacked, but basically tell them to get back in the classroom to learn again.
Mm.
You know, like you're saying that to the teacher. I think a lot of teachers are students. You'd need research on this. Like, I love teaching because I love learning. And so I'm channeling myself a little bit here. But one of the things that I love about teaching is you constantly learn, whether it's martial arts. Hey, here's the technique. Here's the angle. Here's when to do this. Oh, now I understand it better. There are very famous teachers on YouTube who talk about this in podcasts about their teaching on YouTube. I teach because in the VC venture capital world, they talk about deal flow. Like, when you're a successful VC person, you get a lot of deals coming in. Teacher, you get a lot of question flow. Well, how do you do this? What do you mean by that? And you go, oh, now I understand that better. I feel like there's a dynamic there that's actually quite interesting. I'm not sure if we're fully and clearly landing the language. Any reaction to that last one?
I like the go back to the classroom idea. I think that's also something that people worry about. They're like, oh, I don't want to go back to that. You know, they don't want to go back to school. That could be maybe misconstrued, I think. There's actually something in the chat that I love. This is Ghislaine. I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing your name, but she says your knowledge is powerful. Yeah, that really speaks to me.
Maybe that direction is because I'm just thinking about teachers that, you hear about this stuff in New York every now and then. You know, someone was 10 years at Goldman Sachs, then they became a teacher. And in fact, actually, one of my kids' teachers, September 11, downtown, they quit and became a teacher because of what happened, and they wanted to do something different. There's probably a direction here, which, you know, maybe it's a bit cliche in the teaching space, but about how you can make up for the knowledge with real life skills and experience, right? Or make up for your lack of whatever it is, make up for your lack of teaching experience with real life experience. That's a bit obvious, and I'd want better language than that, but I think it's a valid direction. And what I want to point out is when you're doing strategy, it's messy. And sometimes you want to write a sentence like that and go, okay, I get it. And now I'm going to go find better words for it. And you might do that by going to Reddit or talking to someone going, I think this is what it's about. And then they say something that feels more real talk. And like, thank you, I'll take that. The second direction is something to do with acknowledging the fact that you are also going to go back to the classroom to learn again. You're going to teach and you're going to learn again. And it's going to be a beautiful thing and quite exciting. So I don't know if I've nailed the language as we're trying to do this on the fly, but I feel like there are two directions here. And I would argue that even though we haven't nailed it, they're probably 10 to 20% more psychologically raw than the three campaigns you took us through earlier, right? 10 to 20%. And that's not to say they're 10 to 20% better. Maybe this technique fails for you or this approach fails for you. But really the goal of this session was I just wanted to try to connect everybody to a sense of rawness and the messiness of doing this, especially in public while you're typing, and how where we want to get to. Like, I'd rather get to two things here which aren't quite finished but feel raw than circling in things that would be acceptable by policy people. The final thing that I wanted to show is there's a Washington Post article about teaching, and there's a quote from a person who'll be very prominent. They're already very prominent. They'll be even more prominent as national election time comes. I won't say the name because it will trigger some people. And this person says that a college degree is a magic piece of paper, which likely would have cost too much anyway. Now, yes, we just went through 40-ish minutes of exercises, but you could take a quote like that, and I'm focusing on a magic piece of paper, and do a whole campaign about how beautiful a magic piece of paper is. A whole campaign could come from one quote, one sentence. All right, we're going to wrap it up there. Jen, Teresa, and Nancy from Teach, thanks to Yasmin for wrapping it up.
Thanks so much for having us on your show.
It was a pleasure. Thank you all for joining me on Sweathead here today. I'm sure we'll have follow-up interactions. For now, peace.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Sweathead. If it's your first time here, please subscribe. If you enjoyed the episode, please share it with a friend or leave a kind rating. For more information about our strategy classes, events, and books, visit www.sweathead.com. And yes, you can find us on Instagram at Sweathead.